This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
More on the Braves making some moves, and Ian Anderson heading out west, if he gets better luck with the Angels. We're going to talk to Grant McCauley later this week. We'll cover the Braves' moves, because now we're getting close. Can't wait. We'll be at Murph's, by the way, for the home opener. Braves start the West Coast swing to start the season in San Diego, but we'll be doing our thing at Murph's. We've got the All-Star game this year in the A. It's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully the Braves will give us another division title and more, because that's what we're expecting, isn't it? But isn't it always?
Pitching,
right,
and more pitching.
Right on. Can't wait to see what Acuña's going to be. We played some of the AA audio from a Sirius satellite radio interview. Well, if you missed it, we'll replay some of the things he had to say about what he's expecting. Right now, though, time for some fourth and one. Yeah, man. Brought to you by Priority Men's Medical Center. Check them out at PriorityMen'sMedical.com. Carl is still coming back from vacay, so we got Chris today in for Carl. Chris Thomas got the weekend off, so he's full of things to bloviate about. Starting with, speaking of bloviation, what's going on with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, man. He is not doing nothing right now. He is moving at a snail-like pace trying to make this decision, which I get. I mean, there technically is no rush, but you know, if I'm him coming off that Jets disaster, Mike, wouldn't you want to be settled into your new home, game planning, getting right. ready for the
well,
summer?
How much of this was on him, though? I mean, he did throw 28 touchdowns. I mean, we know that he was a guy in that locker room that some people could take or leave. Salah got, but the owner's also incompetent.
Yes.
So, I mean, as much as I would love to just pile on Aaron Rodgers, I mean, you know, you did provide a modicum of offense. You didn't throw for a lot of yards this year by NFL standards, but you did bring in Devontae Adams, and he was kind of a dud spud at times. You do have Breece Hall. You had all these weapons. And defense, they were late with Hassan Reddick. Some of these things, if you ask me, were sort of beyond his control. He makes it easy to dislike him with the way he carries on Pat McAfee and all the, you know, the passive-aggressive crap that he pulls talking about his teammates. But, you know, at the end of the day, was it truly his fault?
Yeah, it kind of was.
I think, to whom much is given, much is expected. Yeah. I get that.
What's our phrase for Russell Wilson? Toxic positivity.
Right.
I think he has some of that in his veins as well. But seriously, though, like if you're going to be on a redemption, even if it's just public perception-wise, if you're going to be on a redemption tour, don't you want to start that thing as soon as possible? Like, what's the holdups?
Yeah. That's the thing. If you didn't see it, Cam Hayward was on it. Again, last week he basically said, I don't need it. We don't want it. Forget it. If you don't want to be a Steeler, you know, say, that's right. We rolled it without it. Sorry, I was invoking some bastardized version of New Jack City there, but you get the idea. Cam Hayward was like, let's go. Where's a sense of urgency? If you want to be a Steeler or you don't. He went on Rich Eisen's show, and he was talking about, you know, the trade for DK Metcalf. And basically said he wasn't going to go on no darkness retreat. Now, he was a setup. The guy in the podcast last week asked Cam Hayward about a darkness retreat. He goes, I ain't going on no darkness retreat. Then it was kind of funny after that. But he did say, and I agree with talking to Rich Eisen, the Steelers are in a, quote, state of urgency. We have a lot of guys like myself that are in the latter stages of our career. And as we said, you're not going anywhere in the playoffs. It's go time.
And so is Aaron Rodgers, by the way. Aaron Rodgers is going to be 42 years old, I think, by the time the season kicks off next year, or in December of next year.
Right.
So what it comes down to is that you need to get this guy on board in your building and developing your program with these guys. Because, Mike, last time we checked, that wide receiver room, I mean, I know they got better in the offseason by the addition of DK, but, you know, you're not throwing to the second coming of Randy Moss there, so you got to get with these guys and start going here.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to see how George Pickens reacts to a guy making 10 times what he's making in the locker room, even though obviously it's the rules, you know, fifth year, you're going to get paid at some point. But, yeah, they've had some dysfunction there at the wide receiver position. Tomlin's had to deal with this, but as, you know, as Cam Hayward said in the interview, you know, we're not winning playoff games, and that's leaving a bad taste in everyone's mouth. The Steelers, I mean, I just don't think you can, you know, they're living in that's ancient history. You're living in the past. Yes, they do things that we would just live for here in Atlanta. Every year they do make the playoffs. They do win 9 to 10 games, but they don't do anything once they're in the playoffs.
Now, I think this becomes the question. Are they better than Cincinnati?
They're the same as Marvin Lewis's Cincinnati. When Marvin Lewis was doing the same thing years ago. But are they better now? I mean, if you get Aaron Rodgers plugged in there, you're better than Cincinnati because Cincinnati has no defense.
They have no defense.
They can score 45 and give up 46.
And what's going to happen with Trey Hendrickson? He still is out there as far as I know. I haven't seen anything new on him.
I'm curious if, you know, he's under contract. So, I mean, it's about a trade, right?
It's about a trade. I mean, essentially, he wants the trade and he wants the new contract. And I don't know if he would do the sit out thing.
Missed games. I know Carl always talks about 30. There was a movie for you science fiction fans called Logan's Run about a dystopian society. And basically, for population control, once you hit 30, you're gone. So you got to live your life until you're 30, and that's it. And that's basically it. Used to be that's it for an edge rusher, wide receiver, or running back in the NFL. But he's put up solid numbers, and he hasn't missed games, and he's got 30 and a half sacks the last 2 years.
Yeah, so if I was a betting man, I would say he's gone. They do find a way to move him because it sounds like things there are pretty untenable. But then that leaves even bigger of a void. Talk about us having to go all defense in the draft. How about if you're Cincinnati? Right. And then that pushes Pittsburgh to only behind the Ravens if Aaron Rodgers goes there.
I want to see Aaron Rodgers go to Pittsburgh. And Carl and I touched on this last week. Could you imagine the battle of the wills between Aaron Rodgers and Arthur Smith as far as game plan development? As far as what Aaron wants to do and what he... Remember, Aaron Rodgers has squashed Matt LaFleur plays at times.
Yeah.
You know, he squashed Mike McCarthy and Matt LaFleur plays. Which, I mean, so I would love to see what that dynamic would be like with him and Arthur Smith.
Those would be two old bulls just crashing at the head, Mike Bell.
Hey, man, this hour of the show is brought to you by our buddies at All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. This is our fourth and one talking about the league. The latest, and this is a report from Pro Football Talk. And they are retweeting another article that comes from, it's called proofreading, and I should have done it. I don't know if D-Led had this or not. But either way, it's saying that basically Kirk Cousins will wait until after the draft to accept a possible trade. So you're not going to get anything in this year's draft. In other words, we're not going to find a third-round pick or another second-round pick. That was always a best-case scenario. I always thought fourth round was most likely. We could use everything we can get. We have no third-rounder. We have no fifth or sixth-rounder in this draft. But Kirk Cousins will wait until after the draft to accept a possible trade.
Well, if that's the case, then good on you, buddy. Sit there.
It comes from Albert Breer, by the way, of SI.com. Albert's got it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, then, it would have been either the Titans, the Browns, or the Giants, basically, at this point. Well, I don't know if the Giants...
If you got Jameis Winston, you're going to go draft Shador Sanders, you know, because I don't think you would double down on two quarterbacks at that stage of their career like Jameis.
Same age, so I agree with you on that. So it was really only down to a couple of teams anyway, and the Browns don't have the cap space to do it, and the Titans are picking number one overall, and it looks like, from everything I'm seeing so far, Cam Ward is going to be the play there. So there's no room at the end. There was really nowhere for him to go anyway. So I'm really not surprised by this. Now it's just about trying to maximize what you can get. And basically, that I think the best route for that, Mike, is clearly going to be, unfortunately, an injury.
Albert Breer telling us what we've talked about, but confirming what we've kind of guessed at. And that is Kirk Cousins would block a trade if he's going to have somebody over his shoulder. Well, every team that's going to trade for you, you're not going to be around for more than 2 or 3 years. They're going to have somebody else in the pipeline, whether they've drafted in last year or this year. In the Albert Breer article in SI today, it says, why would Cousins block a trade to a place where he can start? Albert Breer says, his understanding, Chris, it would be chiefly to avoid the situation he found himself last April when he was blindsided by Atlanta's decision to draft Michael Penix Jr.
Okay, but sorry, buddy, you're not going to a team that's ready to win a Super Bowl.
No, I mean, if you go to Cleveland, there's nobody there. They're not going to, unless they go Cam Ward, in which case they don't need you anyway.
Hey, Kenny Pickett's offended by that.
Well, I mean, if you're Cleveland, just start Cam Ward and get on with your life. Yeah. You got a good defense. You got enough weapons there. Go for it.
No, you're right. You're right. But here's the thing. If you're Kirk Cousins and you're basically banking on a scenario where a Super Bowl-ready team loses their quarterback midway through camp, and then the Falcons can make a deal for you to go there for, you know, a third round or a fourth round pick, that's, what is that? Like, that's not a plan. You're just hoping that something might happen, but that's by far and away the best case scenario. Otherwise, you're going to go, I don't know, who's going to trade for you? The Texans, and you're going to sit behind CJ Stroud. Like, what scenario do you have here?
Yeah, I just think that, you know, the more we looked at it, it was the Giants were a viable option. I don't think they're an option now.
No.
I wonder, who knows? If everybody thinks you can have your cake and eat it too, like, I'm the Giants, I could trade down, get a pick, and still get Shedeur Sanders because somebody wants to come up for something else? I don't know. Risky strategy. Giants just take Shedeur Sanders, I think. I think Cam Ward goes to Cleveland. And then, you know, if you're Tennessee, I mean, I should say, what if Tennessee goes with what? Cam Ward?
I think Tennessee's probably going to go Cam Ward. And then it's going to be, are the Giants going to do a lot to trade up one spot?
Because that's where, if the Titans don't go Cam Ward and the Browns don't get Cam Ward, they go Abdul Carter, then the Kirk Cousins thing makes sense. Because then you got a viable option for 2 years for Cleveland, and then you figure out what your quarterback is down the road.
Yeah, that's the one that makes the most sense to me. And then
Giants would take Sanders at 3.
Yeah, and then you'd be off and running there. But again, you're going to have to wait to see now what happens, because if you're going to do this, then you're essentially saying, I'm banking on a quarterback getting hurt, and I feel like that's my best route to start.
And then the best player physically in the draft, Travis Hunter, might fall all the way down to the – I can't imagine that, just my 2 cents worth, they say that they want to go get some offensive line beef for the Patriots. That's what they're saying up there. But it's hard to see Vrabel passing on a guy like Travis Hunter.
No, you can't pass on
right?
him.
That's right. That's why I'm – this is the most recent draft. Again, just one man's opinion, but it's Pete Prisco from CBS.
Go draft 4 offensive linemen in a row in the next 4 picks and hope that one of them clicks, because Hunter's going to be a star.
One more on Albert Breer about Kirk Cousins. There's a risk involved, the idea that Shedeur Sanders or somebody may fall in love with Jackson Dart. There's even some mock drafts where the Steelers go after Jackson Dart. Okay. But risk involved, this is from Albert Breer, from Cousins' camp, is he'd probably be able to get at least a 1-year commitment as a starter somewhere ahead of a team deciding to draft a quarterback. And such an opportunity could dry up after the draft. So for the Falcons, we're screwed. If Cousins' camp wants to wait to see who's going to go where, then you're not going to have anybody calling you. Then it's going to be that post-June cut, and we just eat it, and he's off the roster.
Well, unless, and me and you keep saying this, and Carl has said it, everybody says it, unless Atlanta is really dead bleeping serious that they're going to keep this guy on the roster season.
And then the insurance policy, of course, for another, somebody will have an injury, something will not go right, and then maybe you could get a trade. Now, again, we won't be getting anything until the 26th draft. That's it. But then the question, of course, and we've asked guys in the media, and if you don't believe the guys in the media, we've asked actually guys that have been in NFL locker rooms as players. We talked to Brian McFadden last week. Ovi Mihaly was on Thursday. They said there'd be an attitude, an issue with what Kirk Cousins was slinging, you know, what he was throwing out there, because basically you hurt the team by saying you could go when you couldn't, and then you said, no, I was hurt. But then, as I said to Brian McFadden, or it might have been to Ovi, you know, I think there's a third of the locker room that doesn't give a care. They don't give a care one way or the other. They could care less. They're making their money. They put their work in, but they're not affected by anybody else. There's some guys that are like the alpha males that are going to have a problem with it. Then, you know, you could also say that, you know, nowadays in 2025, you know, the whole society's just soft. And now guys would be like, hey, man, Kirk Cousins says a lot of crazy stuff. Kind of how the Red Sox, if you remember, would say, Manny being Manny. You know, he's just a goofball, but hey, he produces, so what are you going to do? You shrug, you roll your eyes, that's Manny being Manny. So if you can deal with that, and if you can control that environment and be okay with the media asking a lot of questions of Kirk and the controversy that we'll try to create, because as you said, and D-Led tried down at the Super Bowl to get Kirk to explain himself, which he never truly has.
No, but the thing is, that all goes out the wash when if you're the Rams and you're 8-1 and Stafford goes down.
Right.
You got to do it.
Hey, man, it's certainly the vibe that Carl's put out there. We'll just roll with it, let the chips fall, and they'll be able to handle the weirdness, because maybe it won't be as weird in that locker room as we're making it out to be. Hey, we'll come back. We're going to flip-flop. Oren's going to do yeah, man, no, man, right? And then we'll talk to our man, DeShaun Tate, on the SEC domination of the Sweet 16. Big 3 o'clock hour on Dukes and Bell. March Madness, and you'll hear it right here on 92.9 The Game. And then before you know it, it's Masters time. And we're very excited, guys. We can let the cat out of the bag. Coming up in, 2 weeks' time on a Wednesday, we're going to be out there for the Par 3 tournament at Twin Peaks in Augusta. So if you guys are lucky enough to have a Masters badge for that Wednesday, or you just live out in that neck of the woods, if you want to come and see us, we had a great crowd up there in Chattanooga, of all places, which was pretty wild. But, yeah, man, we're going to be out on the Masters, the Par 3 tournament, the day of Wednesday for the Masters in Augusta at Twin Peaks. Looking forward to you guys coming. I think Andy Randy going to be out there too, right, Chris? Is that right?
It'll be Abe Gordon. doing his own show. How about that?
My own show. So
my own show.
Abe will be yelling at you. He'll sound like he's in the room next door, but it'll be in Augusta.
It'll be an event like any other.
Hey, man, it is Dukes and Bell, and Chris is in for Carl today. Carl spent the week with his crew out there in Vegas for the tournament. We're talking about the SEC dominance, and who better to talk about that with is our college hoops expert. Follow him at Tate's Take Sports on social media. It's our man, DeShaun Tate. He joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. You got to be stoked, man. Sparty coming to the A.
Yeah, I am, man. First of all, it takes take hoops, but I appreciate you, Mike.
And I had it right.
That's okay.
75%.
You only do it every time, Mike. It's all good. But listen, not only that, but an event like any other, you guys are never going to let that thing die, are you?
Now, we work with a guy, for those who don't know, obviously it's a tradition unlike any other, but a guy that used to work with us here at the station named Mark James, who was my predecessor in Afternoon Drive after Cordell Stewart with Carl, this was trying to like riff on the Masters, and he said
an event,
this.
Unlike any other.
And of course, it's not. It's a tradition. Never mind. But anyway, but that's what we were riffing, and DeShaun knows that. It's Tate's Take Hoops. Get it right, you nitwit, talking to myself. All right, so here's the thing, though.
All good.
Let me get you angry now. So Izzo doesn't win any Final Fours. He doesn't win anything anymore. So what's Michigan State going to do?
Yeah, man. For the person that's known as January, February Izzo, I need him to be known as January, February, March Izzo and being able to win things in the month of April. But listen, I mean, they've got a really tough task in front of them, obviously, with Ole Miss the last time that I even had a conversation less than 24 hours ago with head coach Tom Izzo in the scrum and just asking him about, hey, the last time that you made a run this deep into the tournament, you lost to Texas Tech in the Final Four, and what do you kind of expect from one of his teams? And, you know, they're always going to be very defensive-minded type of team, and they've got a very, very experienced group over there. The SEC has been representing fairly well also. This is not going to be easy. It's going to be a tough task to climb, but I think Michigan State obviously is equipped. They're one of the better teams in the country in terms of pace, rebounding. They go really deep on the bench. They run about 10 guys out there. So obviously it's going to be difficult. And the last time that we saw a Sweet 16 setting here in Atlanta, you know what the four teams were? They were Kentucky, Loyola Chicago, Kansas State, and Nevada, with Loyola coming out of that thing. So it's not far-fetched to assume that it's a possibility anyways that Ole Miss could end up being the team that advances.
Well, let's talk about the other game in State Farm, and that is number 5 Michigan taking on number 1 Auburn. A big spread, 8.5 for Auburn, but Michigan's been spunky in this tournament. How do you see this one going?
They have. I mean, I like Auburn for the win. I think anybody you ask is probably going to say such things. But, you know, Michigan has been hot lately, a little bit hotter, I think, than Auburn has. Auburn lost some games late in the month of March in terms of in the regular season with a loss to Alabama in a rivalry game. And then obviously in the conference tournament, Michigan won there. So they've been hot. Feeling a little bit disrespected probably because they get a 5 seed after winning the conference tournament. But you know, Auburn's obviously been the best team in the country pretty much all season long. I know Duke probably has some things to say about that, led by Janai Broome. But I'll tell you one thing about, you know, Michigan. They'll be ready and equipped for Broome in the front court with Vlad Golden, who has Final Four experience, as well as their head coach and Dusty May from Florida Atlantic. And then you got Danny Wolf, who's a transfer, one of the best in the country from an IQ standpoint, passing, scoring, all of those things. Two Twin Towers in the front court are going to make it really difficult. Michigan's going to need some guard play to play really, really well beyond themselves if they want to advance.
It is our man, DeShaun Tate, talking about you know, this tournament, which we were just debating. Is it the same thing when you don't have the mid-majors? You just talked about it. Yeah, you know, having a Catholic a nun who's about, 100 years old, you know, rooting for a college basketball team is a fun story. But I just think, you know, the casual fan knows these name brands. These are all name brands now that you know. And I don't know, you know, what the interest level or how much you know the same players, because with so much in the transfer portal, you know, there was a time, you know, you knew the starting five for Georgia Tech. You knew the starting five in the Big East back in the day. You knew, obviously, Kentucky's starting five. Does anybody know that other than you these days?
But not many. I'll say that much. But you know, a lot of it, before we even get into transfer portal, a lot of it due to NIL, and I think in the ways that NIL has kind of helped college basketball is because you get some of these guys that's returning back to college, putting some money into their pockets, and not having to figure out, you know, how many bags they're gonna, you know, have to fill at the grocery stores in the event the NBA doesn't work out for them. So they stay in college, they make a little bit of money, and that gives you an opportunity to be able to learn them a little bit more. The problem with that is that they're not staying at the same school that you last saw them at. And obviously that transfer portal is something that's really helping a lot of these teams that you even see in this exact same tournament, Coach Calipari and a few others. But even more so, the fact that, you know, when you have all of those transfers, it just really makes it complicated to be able to keep up with these guys. And even in many cases, the transfer portal is even a bigger deal than recruiting some guys out of high school. A lot of these teams are looking for, you know, upperclassmen, guys that have some experience, even if it's not, you know, NCAA tournament, just to be able to get, you know, some elder guys in there who's ready for a bigger stage versus a 17 or an 18-year-old.
You talked about Coach Cal there. Was it a bigger misstep by Pitino or a greater coaching job by Cal in the game that saw Arkansas take down St. John's?
I mean, I just think that Arkansas has just been hot, you know. I mean, most people won't realize this, but coming into the season, not only are they ranked in the top 25, I think they're ranked in the top 15. They start out the regular season not doing very well, and even getting into conference play, I think they started out 0-5 or something like that. And a lot of people just kind of overlooked them, forgot about them. But not only do they have some older guys, which you typically don't see with a Coach Calipari-type team, but even more so, they also are able to add the talent in there as well. So you get a good combination. You provide a little bit of balance, and guys are just like any other team around this time of the year. It's all about getting hot at the right time. They're not the only ones, especially in the SEC. Obviously, Florida's still unbeaten in the month of March. Here we are almost 4 weeks in. They're still unbeaten. And you got some other SEC teams as well that have been playing a really good brand of basketball. But the Big Ten is also in there trying to flex their muscles a little bit, as I'm sure that people will oftentimes remind me that it's been 25 years since Michigan State or anybody in the Big Ten has won the national championship. So it should make for a really interesting March. And even in the South bracket here in the South region here in Atlanta, where you have the two Michigan schools that are going to be representing the Big Ten here in the ATL this weekend.
It is our man, Deshaun Tate. Guys, get a chance to talk to him. Follow him, too, by the way, at Deshaun Tate.
Take hoops.
I'll get it right. I'm looking right at it, too, by the way. So he joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Check out. He's got podcasts. He's always interviewing big coaches and big names. He lives for this stuff. So I got into we're just talking about the casual fan. I got back and nostalgic for the old days of the Big East, Deshaun. I was watching the Rick Pitino documentary. And then, man, that Arkansas matchup was just great. Because, you know, Pitino and Calipari, they're not even close to being boys. You know, they respect each other, but they've never been tight. And I just thought, man, that front court, the fours and fives for the Hogs were just too much for St. John's. But explain the whole R.J. Lewis thing. Because, I mean, it was like John Starks. Because Pitino couldn't make much sense saying that he was having a cold night shooting. You can't sit your best player. You got to dive with the guy, don't you?
Yeah, I would imagine that that's the case. I don't know if there's something else that was maybe going on that maybe he isn't necessarily speaking on. I mean, granted, I mean, just to be fair about it, I mean, this guy probably, I would imagine, obviously he knows what he's doing. He's taking six different schools to the NCAA tournament and won regular season championships like crazy. I mean, he's up there amongst being the best ever that has ever coached this game. But in terms of, you know, I won't pretend to play radio on you guys' program. I'm a little bit better than that. I don't know exactly what transpired, but, you know, he has a point if it has anything to do with who's had a better, you know, shooting night. I don't love the idea of that. I think it's kind of a hard sell, to be honest with you, but you know, it's not like he was having a hot night and then decided to sit his guy. The problem with that is nobody else on the team was particularly having a really hot night either, so I guess it just depends on what side of the fence you lay on.
All right, Deshaun, here we go. We got number 2 Tennessee, number 3 Kentucky. Rick Barnes, Mark Pope. I think Barnes would have the advantage coaching just based on experience, but how do you see this one playing out? A little bit of a different style of ball. Tennessee can be overwhelming at times, but Kentucky rolling along as a program under Pope as well.
Yeah, I mean, for such a long time until I, you know, really started getting my act together and figuring, you know, how Houston was playing throughout the season and where they could stand at the end of this thing, I had Kentucky as my national championship winner. They are one of the very few teams that was able to, you know, knock off Duke at the beginning of the year. Matter of fact, right here in Atlanta at the Champions Classic, where the games are going to be played this weekend. And, you know, Rick Barnes is a little bit more of a hard sell for me in terms of March. he always tends to underachieve. His teams are always really good. I know, choke job, right? Regular season coach, really freaking good, amongst one of the best. Recruiting, one of the best. But when you start getting to this time of the year, he's hard to trust. Now, Kentucky, this is something we haven't seen. This is a whole new roster, as we already talked about, former coach Coach Cowden over now over at Arkansas. Pope has been able to put some guys together that are willing to run through a brick wall for him. He's got some really good guys over there. Kobe Brea, one of the best three-point shooters in the country, and they've got some experience, NCAA tournament experience, and he's just got guys to kind of mesh well together and develop and establish chemistry amongst one another. They've had some injury issues, and I think that's why we've kind of forgotten about Kentucky a little bit. I like Kentucky in this one only really because I don't trust, from a coaching standpoint, Rick Barnes all of that much, but they can definitely do it. I don't think it'll surprise anybody if they did, but I'm going to go with Kentucky on this one to advance.
If you don't like Dan Hurley, it was kind of fun watching the Gators send him home because he does rub some people the wrong way, but it was funny as he's leaving the arena, he sees the Baylor players in the tunnel. I hope they don't blank you like they blanked us. So, now Florida against Maryland, and it was funny, they asked one of the Maryland players, why do you like your coach so much? Because he gets us paid, man. So where does it go? Florida, some guys, I know certainly on the selection show, the ESPN guys felt that Florida was the number one team in this tournament.
Yeah, and a lot of people still feel that way. I mean, it's really hard to argue that they're not. Obviously, with Will Richard, Elijah Martin is a transfer from that FAU team that went to the Final Four I was referencing a little bit earlier in the segment. And, you know, they've got the guard play. That's something you got to have in this tournament, not just guard play, but experienced guards. And they do go deep on the bench. And you got some front court players, specifically Alex Condon, who, you know, is a player that, you know, has come into his own as of late. And from a coaching standpoint, you know, I mean, Kevin Willard hasn't really won a whole lot either, as much as Coach Golden over at Florida has. So I definitely pick Florida for the winner, but I'll tell you one thing about Maryland is that they scored the most points amongst any team, all 363 in Division I in terms of their starting five. Problem with that is once you start bringing guys off the bench, starting with the very first guy as a sixth man, he averages about 4 points a game and everyone under him scores less. So if it comes down to, you know, Florida getting those guys in foul trouble, it's going to be a problem, but that's a tall task too because Derek Queen, who hit the game-winning shot on last night over Colorado State, was once at one point in time the number one player in the country for this particular class amongst incoming freshmen, and he is a really good player. So you know what, I've heard some people ask me about him already. I don't anticipate that the Hawks will be able to have a pick this early, but in the event he's still sitting there in June's draft and you need a backup center, he would probably most likely be your guy. It'd be a bonehead decision not to take a look at him and bring him in for a workout.
All right, man. Deshaun always giving us great stuff, man. Good luck with Sparty. I know you're going to have a blast. He'll be out there. He'll probably be sleeping out there probably tomorrow night. But, hey, man, thanks for the time.
Thank you guys for having me.
That's Deshaun, man. It's Tate's Take Hoops. Got it right. On Twitter. And he can answer your questions, too, if you got questions about how to finish. You know, but you already got your bracket out there, but you're going to bet on this. He'll give you a little insight as well.
If only the Hawks had their first-round pick.
Right. Not this year, right? Protected with the with Sacramento, right?
Yeah. Well, they got the it's like the Lakers right. And Sacramento, but they don't have their own.
Hey, man, we'll come back with our man from UGA, Connor Riley. We did not have a chance to talk to him since the latest round of the Fast and the Furiously Stupid. We'll see what he thinks about Kirby's discipline this time around, because a lot of folks kind of rolled their eyes about the news that dropped this last week. Plus, what about it? Can we see Mikael Williams falling in this draft? We'll chop it up. Chris is in for Carl. It's Dukes and Bell.